All right, today we're going to talk about cosmic humanism. This is the weird one. This is the one that if I had worries about most of you guys when you go off to college and the stuff that's going to influence you and the stuff that, you know, might try to trick you into certain things, this is the one I'm least worried about. Because if you listen to anything that we say around here, you shouldn't be taken in by kind of the ridiculousness of cosmic humanism. I see it's very easy, I think, to get caught up in the scientific arguments of secular humanism and the humanity arguments of Marxism, things like that. But this is a kind of a whole other level. So I really want to only spend today on it. And most of the time when we go through these units, the cosmic humanism unit, we will spend the least amount of time on. Because I think it's the least threatening to you, because you'll see as we go through this, it's kind of ridiculous. It's kind of really far out there. If we lived in an Eastern society, we might have a few more impact, because Buddhism would fall into this idea. But in the United States, in the West, Buddhism isn't nearly as prevalent as a major religion. It might influence you, but it's not up there like some of the other stuff that we see. So, cosmic humanism. Hey, it's the only worldview that we look at that doesn't embrace theism or atheism. Okay? It's the only one that we look at that does not embrace theism or atheism. And okay? So, it's the only one that doesn't say there is a God or there isn't a God. So that makes it unique. Okay? They deny the preeminence of any special revelation over any other. What does that mean?
It means they don't believe.
Anybody? They deny the preeminence of any special revelation over any other.
They don't believe in miracles. They don't believe in prophecy.
Okay, they definitely don't do that. That's a little different than what's being said here, though. What are they saying about scriptures? And
they don't believe in the Messiah
is born. One isn't more special than the other.
Yeah, so what are some what are some specific examples of that? What special revelation are they talking about? What's our only form of special revelation?
God.
Bible, right? That's how he speaks to us. What would the Muslims say special revelation is?
Quran.
Okay? And then other revelations we would have, think about any kind of religious leader you can think of, Joseph Smith and Mormonism. Okay? Any other special revelation that somebody would claim for that. What they say is that none are any better than any other. So, the Quran, the Bible, the Book of Mormon, whatever it is, it's all, nothing is ranked over anything else. It's all the same. Right? And obviously, kind of what Austin touched on, they're not going to, if the Bible isn't preeminent, what's that going to do to their view on Christianity? Yeah, they're not going to believe it. Again, there's no gospel there, because there's no truth. Right? This is what David Spangler said. Spangler is one of the guys you put in your matrix as one of the leaders. Okay? We can take all the scriptures and all the teachings and all the tablets and all the laws and all the marshmallows and have a jolly good bonfire and marshmallow roast, because that's all they are worth. He said it's just paper. It's just words written on paper. It doesn't mean anything. That's what a cosmic humanist would say about scripture. Okay, so if the Bible is void of meaning and truth, what does that mean for the gospel? We just touched on that. So, if there's no meaning, there's no truth in the Bible, then there's no death, burial, resurrection. There's no truth in that sense. There's no God that has a plan of redemption. All that stuff goes out the window as far as the cosmic humanist is concerned. This Science of Mind is a cosmic humanist publication. It says the significance of incarnation. What's the incarnation? Good theological term you should know. Yeah, God in the flesh. Right? God in the flesh. Very good. So the significance of incarnation and resurrection is not that Jesus was human like us, but rather that we are gods like him, or at least we have the potential to be. So now we're getting into what they view God to be. And so it's not the fact that Jesus was human, not God in the flesh. They don't view that. They view that Jesus was a human being who achieved godhood. Now you see how they twist that around a little bit? Not God in the flesh, but a human being who achieved godhood. And then what does he say at the end there? What's he saying?
That we have potential.
Potential to be what?
A
gods.
We have potential to be gods as well. So if you just work really hard, you could be a god.
Okay.
The Mormons will tell you the same thing. Hey, John White said, the Son of God is not Jesus, but our combined Christ consciousness. So that's a term that the cosmic humanists like to use. Christ consciousness. Okay? So you've got the Word in there. You've got Christ in there. But Christ consciousness. Jesus is looked at as being in select company, one that achieved Christ consciousness. So he's not God. He's just a guy that figured it all out. Okay? If you know anything about Buddhism, who's our central guy in Buddhism? Buddha, right? The Buddha. Okay? He has a longer name, but you can just call him the Buddha, right? Little fat guy, bald head. You know, you get little statues of him in gift shops. Right? Yes, he's always happy, laughing guy. Hey, you can actually get like statues of skinny Buddha too, but the fat one is the popular one. I guess later in life, it's kind of like Elvis. Like if you look early in his career, it was like skinny Elvis, and then like in the late 70s, it was like fat bloated Elvis. Okay? So I guess it's the same thing with Buddha. Buddha was skinny one day, and then he got happy, and then he got fat. Because when you're eating a lot of food, you're usually happy. So I guess that's the idea. Okay, so. What do the Buddhists say? What's the word? What's the word that Buddhists say that would kind of equal this Christ consciousness thing? What do you achieve in Buddhism?
You enlightenment.
Karma's in there, but there's something to the same thing as figuring it all out.
Enlightenment's
close. Yeah, there's another word that they use for it. It's also a grunge band from the early
Nirvana.
There we go. Nirvana. Going to be culturally informed. Okay? So, Christ consciousness. Shh, pay attention. Okay? I hope y'all pay a little back, by the way. Dang, pay attention. When you totally ignore everything, I don't root for you to pass. So, Christ consciousness and nirvana, kind of the same thing. It means you finally figured it all out. You know, you finally got this enlightenment. You know what life is all about. You know what truth is all about. You've become one with the universe again. See how silly it sounds? This is why I don't worry about y'all falling for Christ, for this cosmic humanist stuff. But it's good to know about it because when you go to college, especially if you end up in any kind of secular environment, you will run into a minority group of these people. Okay? They usually wear Birkenstocks and don't smell real good. They play hacky sack and things like that. But you will run into people that really like this whole one with the universe idea. But you usually won't take them very seriously. Like, this is not a group that you guys would normally gravitate to. Even if your faith isn't as solid as maybe we would like it to be, this would not necessarily be the group that you go to. But if you ever want to witness to somebody in this group, it's good to know what they believe. Okay, so how can anyone hope to achieve this divine consciousness? Well, we can do it because everyone is part of God. That's their idea. You know, well, how do I get to this Christ consciousness? Well, they would say that everyone's part of God, and they say that you and God exist as one. And so you are God, God is you. A little circle there. So not only can you just, it's good meditation. That you and God exist as one. You would exist ontologically as one. Hey, that's a big word, but it just means you are the same manner of existence. So you're exactly the same as God. So what does that do to God? We've pulled down God from the heavens and we brought him down to us. And not in the incarnation sense. Right, you know, God, we don't have a sovereign God. We don't have a God we need to worship because we're God. And he's us. Okay, see how silly this kind of sounds? Hey, here's what Ruth Montgomery, another cosmic humanist, said. We are as much God as God is a part of us. Each of us is God. Together we are God. This is all for one and one for all. Makes us the whole of God. And like the stupidest statement you've ever heard in your life. That's what she said. White, the guy we quoted before, he says, sooner or later, every human being will feel a call from the cosmos to ascend to Godhood. Now, look what he said. Every human being will feel a call from the cosmos, from the universe, the great big universe that we're all part of, to ascend to Godhood. Now, is he totally wrong? And the way he states it, he's wrong, but is there some truth to what he's saying?
Yes.
Where's the truth at?
Good God, good Father.
Think of it more from our perspective. What do we often try to do in our sin nature?
Sin.
When we rebel against God, what are we saying? We're better. We know better. Right? I want to be in control of my life. I don't want to submit to anybody. Right? You ever talk to somebody who really, and my dad can't stand the word submit. I don't submit to anybody, but you know. That's our natural idea. Like, nobody can tell me what to do. Like, isn't that the first thing you say, like, when you get mad with your parents? Nobody can tell me what to do. That's our natural inclination. So when he says every human being will feel a call from the cosmos to ascend to godhood, we're not getting a call from the godhood, from the universe to ascend to godhood. Our very nature is to ascend to godhood. Because why did Adam and Eve eat from the tree? Yeah, what does Satan tell them? You know, you will be like gods. Right? And that was the motivation. I want to ascend to godhood. So this is really just a twist on the old sin nature. It's back to the same thing we saw in the garden. Yeah.
Sort of like they're almost trying to pull us like into being part of the Trinity almost.
Yeah, well, they wouldn't even recognize something like the Trinity. But they would just say, there's no need to define a God because you get to do everything yourself. Does that make sense? Okay. So, I don't even know how to say her name. Baba. We'll call her Baba. There is only one question. And once you know the answer to that question, there are no more to ask. Who am I? And to that question, there is only one answer. I am God. Okay? Not, I can be like God, or I want to be like God. No, I am God. She says that that's the question that we all have to come to. And we figure out that we're actually God. Then we can start moving forward on this journey. Right?
Just see how it goes with that.
Now, Shirley MacLaine. Anybody ever heard of Shirley MacLaine before?
Nope.
She's an actress. So it's kind of strange that she ends up on this list.
I think about Shirley.
A different Shirley. She's really old, though. Not quite as old as Shirley Temple, but pretty old. Anybody? Probably the girls would be the only ones to answer because the guys don't usually watch this movie. But anybody seen Fried Green Tomatoes? It's like the southern movie you have to watch. But Shirley MacLaine's in that movie. She's Weezer. That's her name in the movie. That's Shirley MacLaine, and she's kind of nuts. She's had a reputation of being kind of loopy for a long time. But she's a big New Ager. She's a big cosmic humanist. And so she's this actress from Hollywood, and she actually gets on your Matrix. So she is one of the most well-known cosmic humanists in the country. She recommends that every person should begin each day by affirming his or her own godhood. So she says this is what you should do every morning. You can use I am God, or I am that I am, as Christ often did, or you can extend the affirmation to fit your own needs. So when you get up every morning, you don't say your prayers, you just get up and you say, I am God. Or you can change that to whatever makes you feel better. Affirmation. They love this affirmation thing. What is an affirmation?
It's like what you want to achieve for your status.
What does affirm
like,
mean?
Like to affirm, like
if you're affirming somebody, what are you doing?
You want to like grant taxes.
Yeah, encourage. Exactly. So if you have daily affirmations, you are encouraging yourself. Right? There used to be you guys have probably never seen it, but they used to have this skit on Saturday Night Live with this character named Stuart Smalley. And Stuart Smalley was this real mousy dude. He wore like a bright blue sweater. And he had his own little show, and it was called Daily Affirmations with Stuart Smalley. The guy that played him is Al Franken. He's a big liberal senator up in Minnesota now. But he would sit down, and he would sit in front of the mirror and have his daily affirmations. And he would sit in front of the mirror and he would say, I'm good enough, I'm smart enough, and doggone it, people like me. And then, and then people would come sit on his couch and he would tell them that they're good enough and everybody loves you and everything's great. So you just affirm yourself every day. Right? So in Shirley MacLaine's idea, you affirm yourself by saying, I am God.
Sounds like you can put Emperor Cruz going out
there. Yeah, that's a good one. It's a good show. It's a good movie. Right? No special revelation outside of ourselves. So you don't need a Bible. You don't need a Quran. You don't need any kind of writing. Shh. You just get your truth and your revelation from yourself because you're God. So why do you need to go to anybody else? Why do you need to go to any kind of authority? You're God. You get to set your own revelation. Okay? Inner soul searching. You ever heard that term before? Soul searching. Okay? It's the only significant means of discovering truth. So this was a big movement back in like in the whole hippie culture back in the 60s and late 60s. You would often hear young people say, and I wasn't even born yet, so I wasn't there, but you would often hear young people at that point say, I need to go find myself. Right? I need to do some soul searching and figure out what this is all about. And that's what the cosmic humanist said. That's how you figure out truth. Just go find yourself, you know, with nature. And back then with the hippies, it was like, do drugs and then you can find yourself. You know, get an enlightened state of mind by doing these drugs. That's what they would say. So what are the consequences of declaring man to be God? If we're God, how does that affect us? We talked a little bit about it yesterday with the Marxist stuff. Yeah, it's because it makes the world our world, right? So we set the rules, we set the morals, we set the agendas. All that's up to us, right? And so if you got somebody that's really kind of messed up and twisted, that's not a real good combination. Yeah.
So is it both cosmic and secular that believe like you can find like you can overcome anything and find the answer to any problem if you just look.
Well, the difference close. The difference is a secular humanist would say all the answers are in science.
Yeah.
A cosmic humanist would say all the answers are inside you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Love the
guy. Yeah. So similar approach, different subject matter. Right, so cosmic humanism, the word you want to think of with cosmic humanism is consciousness. Okay? And when they say consciousness, that's a collective consciousness. That means we are all one. We are all unified in consciousness. Only the unity of all can bring the well-being of all. So the world will not be perfect until we all get on the same sort of plane of consciousness, where we're all thinking the same way. Okay? Look in your textbook, if you got it, on page 73. I want to look at the pop culture connection that's in there. And we'll connect this to some movies, and you guys can give me your opinion, because I think you've seen at least one of them. Alright, here's what it says, as you're getting there. Mentor of modern mythologies, Joseph Campbell, American professor and writer, he died in 1987, is best known for his work in comparative mythology and comparative religion and for mentoring a generation of Hollywood directors and screenwriters. In his influential book, The Hero with a Thousand Faces, 1949, Campbell discusses the monomyth. Okay, what does mono mean?
One.
So one myth, the singular myth. Cycle of a hero's journey, a pattern he claims found in many cultures. The monomyth involves the hero receiving a call to adventure and passing threshold guardians, often with the aid of a wise mentor or spirit guide, before entering a dreamlike world. There, after a series of trials, the hero achieves the object of his quest, often an atonement with the father, a sacred marriage, or an apotheosis, which is an elevation to godlike status. He then returns home. Campbell wrote that almost all hero myths, religious and secular, throughout history and across cultures contain at least a subset of those patterns. Thus, Campbell concluded that all religions tell the same story. And do you get what Campbell's hypothesis was? And what does he say? As far as heroes are concerned, what does he always see in hero stories? What does the hero do first? He has a quest. He has an adventure. Before he can go on that quest, who does he have to go see? Some sort of mentor, right? Then he goes out and performs the quest. And what does he get after he performs the quest? It could be the girl. What else?
Money.
Okay. Glory, fame. Okay. It could be an understanding of something. But he achieves that goal and then he goes back home. Okay, so have you guys read the Odyssey? Do you guys have to read the Odyssey?
Yeah,
would the Odyssey fit into that category?
Yeah.
Right? You've got Odysseus who's going to go on this great quest. Does he learn things on that? He returns home. He has to redeem himself. Okay, he has some mentor figures in there. And here's the one we'll get a comparison to. George Lucas was the first Hollywood filmmaker to publicly credit Campbell's influence on his own work. Lucas stated that the Star Wars series, Lucas is the creator of Star Wars, reinvented mythology for today's generation. So, those of you that know Star Wars, does this fit well with the Star Wars movie? Who's our hero?
Luke
Skywalker. Right?
Later.
Who's his mentor?
Kenobi.
And then later on? Who's his mentor? Yoda. And he goes on this quest. What does he... And at the end of Return of the Jedi, what does he get? He's on this quest, really, for his father. Who is his father? Who is this force and all that? And at the end, what's it like for Luke and Vader? What does Darth Vader do at the end of Return of the Jedi? He actually joins Luke, if you remember. He tosses the Emperor over the side and about kills him. And then so Luke has this last kind of reconciliation with his father at the end. Okay? And figures it all out. So Star Wars fits really well with that. So what Campbell says is, every culture I go to, I find the same sort of story. There's a hero, there's a mentor, there's a quest, there's a fulfillment at the end, and then a return home. So he says, since I see that in a lot of different cultures, all the cultures are the same, all religions are the same, all the stories are the same. That's what Campbell says. Now, look what it says as we keep going. Campbell's influence also is seen in a number of other successful Hollywood films, including Disney's 1993 film, The Lion King. How many of y'all have seen The Lion King? Probably most of you, right? Okay? You haven't seen The Lion King, you're missing out. But do you see that same sort of structure in The Lion King? Right? Simba has to do what after Mufasa dies? He's exiled, right? But then who's his mentor figure? Anybody remember his name? He's my favorite character in the whole movie. Rafiki, yeah. Yes, Rafiki is my favorite character in the whole movie. I like Rafiki. It doesn't matter. It's just in the past. That guy's great. He comes in and educates him, right? Tells him who he is, and Simba has to go on a quest to reclaim everything that was his father's.
Isn't it Pumbaa in the other one?
Timon.
Timon.
Timon and Pumbaa, yeah. Hakuna Matata. Right? So you see those same... So here's the idea, and we'll touch on this when we get after this unit, or another unit, when we do some movie analysis, okay? That there are these cosmic humanist things going on in these movies, like Star Wars, like The Lion King, and you got to be smart enough to kind of pick up on that when you're, like, it's not just a fun little movie. Like, when you watch Star Wars, which I love, by the way, you know, favorite, I'm a dork, I like Star Wars movies. So, but you've got to be aware of the agenda that's going on there, because if you totally embrace it, and you embrace this whole Force and Jedi thing, well, you've pretty much brought God down to this Force thing. You change the whole a worldview if you grab onto that too much. I mean, you got people that dress up like these people and go to conventions, so they take it seriously. All right, major theological concept of cosmic humanism is reincarnation. What's reincarnation? After you die, you get to come back as somebody or something else. Each individual soul was present in other material forms early in history, and that it will manifest itself in still other forms after its present body dies. So what a cosmic humanist would tell you is that this is not your only life. You have lived many lives before this. Okay. Sounds logical, right? You've lived many lives before this. Right? And, okay? Y'all ever seen Tommy Wood? That little girl looked like Chris Farley. So apparently Chris Farley has been reincarnated. That's hilarious. Poor little girls on the internet. So the soul will continue in its quest for godhood. So here's the deal with reincarnation. You don't quite figure it out, so you got to come back to somebody else. You don't quite figure it out, so you come back to something else. You don't quite figure it out again. You keep coming back until you get 100 on the test. You get a little bit closer, a little bit closer. So on top of that, a cosmic humanist would say that you would be aware of your experiences in past lifetimes. Because if you're not aware of your experiences, then reincarnation is pretty stupid, because if you're brand new every time, you wouldn't learn anything from what you messed up beforehand. So what would be the point of reincarnation? So you keep coming back. So here's the funny thing. You'll hear this sometimes from people about their past lives. I feel like I lived a past life. Sometimes. And you'll notice that everybody, when they tell their story of their past life, they're all like a famous person. They're all like, I was Joan of Arc, and I was Napoleon. Like, nobody was like the village idiot. Nobody was like the perverted guy in the village. Like, nobody was that guy. Everybody was like the president. You know, it's funny how that goes. Okay? It's weird how everybody that was lived a previous life was a famous person. But there you go.
Okay.
He kind of overlaps, so that would work. Okay. If all is one, then everything that exists is God. Stars are God, water is God, plants are God, the earth is God, whales and dolphins are God, mosquitoes are God, cockroaches are God, rats are God. Think about the nastiest thing you can think of. That's God as well in a cosmic humanist mind. Because everything has to be God in that mindset. Alright, what's the belief that everything is God called?
Pantheism.
Pantheism. Everything is God. Okay? Not polytheism, where you have a lot of gods. Pantheism, everything is God. Okay? That cup sitting on your desk is God. Okay? That rubber band that Mark's playing with right now is God.
Okay? I worship you, rubber band.
Alright, now, I want you to look at this. This is a children's book. It's referenced in your chapter. And this is a cosmic humanist children's book. Now let me read you a little bit of what is in this book. Where did it go? All right. He says in this book, children's book, there are many ways to talk about God. Does that mean that everything that everybody ever says about God is right? Does that mean that God is everything? Yes, God is everything, great and small. God is everything, far away and near. God is everything, bright and dark. And God is everything in between. If everything is God, God is the last leaf on a tree. If everything is God, God is an elephant crashing through the jungle. That sounds like a nice little innocent children's book. But look at the definitions of God there. The first part is my favorite one when he says, does that mean that everything that everybody ever says about God is right? Yes. So, what we say about God is true. What the Muslims say about God is true. What a secular humanist says about God is true. So even though an atheist says there is no God, and we say that there is a God, and He manifested Himself in the flesh, and He came in Jesus Christ, we're both right.
That's awesome.
So isn't that a nice way to live? So next time that you're taking like a math test, just bring this up and say, look, the cosmic humanists say everything is right. So I know we all have different answers, but we should all get 100 on this test. I mean, I know it says 2 plus 2 is 5, but it's true, because we all have the right to our own truth. Right? Seems logical. Okay, so now let's get back to our Star Wars connection. Because he is awesome.
Okay.
Here's what George Lucas said. He said, I've always tried to be aware of what I say in my films because all of us who make motion pictures are teachers with very loud voices. So Lucas is saying, I'm trying to teach people something when they go to the movies. Now, I don't know about y'all, but I don't go to movies thinking, okay, I hope I learned something in this movie. You know, especially a movie like Star Wars. Maybe if I go to a documentary, I might want to learn something. I don't think I'm going to Star Wars to learn something, but he says he's trying to teach you something. The director of Empire Strikes Back, Irvin Kershner, said, I want to introduce some Zen here. There's a little something to think about here in terms of yourself and your surroundings. So he's basically saying, I'm getting some Buddhism out there. I want people to embrace this Buddhism, and I want to teach them what it's all about. And cosmic humanist God is not a personal God. It's just a cosmic force like you see in Star Wars. There's no transcendent God apart from His creation. God is the creation. And so cosmic humanists do believe in a supernatural realm. They're not like secular humanists and postmodernists. They do believe in a supernatural realm, and it consists of spiritual relationships. So it's not like a heaven like we view heaven. It's a spiritual realm, because we're all connected in that spiritual realm, and it's all about relationships with one another. So if we don't achieve godhood in this lifetime, well, it's not a problem, because we're going to get reincarnated anyway, and we're going to get another chance at it.
Yeah.
Okay? And if you're really lucky, if you lived in India and you were a Hindu, they believe in reincarnation, but that's only if you're really, really good, you get to be a cow.
I'd be like,
because,
you know,
so cows, because cows are holy. Yeah. Hence, holy cow. Yeah.
Holy cow.
Okay. Yeah, so when you see something really crazy in India, the cop is saying, holy cow. There's no OMG in India, it's holy cow. Okay?
There you go. All right, so any questions on cosmic humanism? Are we clear? It's pretty simple. This pantheistic, God is everything, everything is God sort of idea, and that we are all one with the universe.